out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 6th of March, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, I've been away for a few days and now I'm back, and I'm also very pleased to say that we have our regular co-host with us once again, Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm great, Sven. Thanks.
So am I. I hear there's some very good news. Somebody's been released from prison, one of our political prisoners. I think maybe we'd best start off with that, I think.
Oh, sure. Let's see. I just saw this yesterday, and I was going to thinking about writing something about it, but Wolfgang Fröhlich, who has been in an Austrian prison off and on for 14 years. He's been imprisoned by them 14 years. He's the nicest man, you know, and just a real decent guy. And all he does is, write things and talk about how the, gas chambers could not have taken place the way they say. The Zyklon B wouldn't work the way they say and so on. And, so yesterday, I think it just happened. He was up in court for another court date. He's been incarcerated, and his lawyer the prosecutor it came up that he should be released for some reason because he probably was on some kind of an appeal that he should be released because he really had not done anything to hurt anybody. And so it said in this article, I had to translate it, had to get it translated from German. But what I got from it was that the bottom line is that they declared him insane and allowed him to go home. Although he's not actually free yet in the final sense, because the prosecutor didn't accept that. But what they had is various judges, and the two judges, I'll just read what I've got here. An academic well-known in judicial circles had to go back, say, Fröhlich is an academic, you know, he's not a, you know, he's not an uneducated man. He's a very intelligent and highly educated man. So anyway, he said to go back to the dock in Krems, that's a city in Austria today, and he's a Holocaust denier. Wolfgang Fröhlich was declared insane and went home. For the seventh time, graduate engineer Wolfgang Fröhlich, 67 years old, had to go to the dock. The well-read man had already spent 13 years in prison. Only 1 year ago, he was in prison for several years, which was, not legally binding, it says. Again and again, he had written to national counselors, judges, and ministers from the cell and spread his confused theses. The content basically was the gas chambers in Mauthausen would have been established only, or should have been really, could have been established only after the war. The man obviously wanted to change the European understanding of history in his megalomania. That's the way they wrote about it. They say that, you know, anybody who would, he say he's delusional, that they just can't get him over his belief that the Holocaust didn't happen as they say, and that there weren't any gas chambers and so on. That this, you know, this was presented as a delusion to the people. At least they write about it in Austria, which in Germany they won't tell the people that these things are going on. But in Austria, they have a lot more respect for their own Austrian people. They're not so they're not so ready to just throw them to the lions. So anyway, he was there. He was speaking, and it says that one expert, they had these expert opinions there about his sanity. One expert considered him to be sane. Another expert also considered him to be sane, but a senior expert did not consider him to be sane, and the defender, his lawyer, told the court that he was not a dangerous criminal and that he could not be convicted because he was not accountable for his actions. His lawyer has been arguing that he's on the insanity charge in order to get him off. And so he said that there's no dangerousness to justify the accommodation. And this was the line I liked. His lawyer said that argued that the Republic of Austria must endure that someone spreads his scientific opinion. That means if people have basically, if people have different beliefs and they base it on some scientific ideas, they have to be tolerated. Even if the people think they're wrong or crazy, there's nothing, no reason why they should be put in prison. So the jury considered that the defendant wasn't insane, 8-0. They said they declared him insane, but they didn't send him to an institution for the insane, but they allowed him to go home.
Well, that's
and
wonderful.
Now the public prosecutor has filed an appeal for nullity. So this verdict is not the final one. They just keep appealing in those countries. But anyway, they say that Froelich did promise to stop writing these letters that he writes to. He writes to the people in the court and all kinds of authorities, explaining to them what the facts are. And that's why he gets in all this trouble.
It's amazing. Amazing that somebody can actually be within prison and then they can accuse you of committing crimes while you are actually in the prison because he's been writing letters. And I looked at the reason why he was first sent to jail. He was appearing as a witness for the defense in Jürgen Graf's trial as an expert on extermination, on bug extermination. And he said, cyanide, it cannot evaporate at 15 degrees. And basically the supposed gas chamber, even with all the bodies in there, it never would have got above 15 degrees. So the cyanide could not be turned into a gas. And that's basically a fact. So what they're saying is that even him saying those facts is insanity. It's insane to say that, even though that's the truth. And he's an expert on it. And they also intimidated him. The judge then intimidated him when he was the defense witness. And he said that the judge said, well, if you don't stay silent, I'm going to charge you with race hate crimes, because he said this fact that had nothing to do with race hate crimes at all. And the defense solicitor then said to the judge, you're intimidating the witness, which he was threatening to charge him under something completely unrelated. I mean, this is Holocaust denial or it's race hate. You can't say that it's both the same thing. And this judge was trying to intimidate him with it. I just find it shocking. It's the first time I've read about it. I think I've heard his name before, but it's just a shocking story all the way through. And the fact they keep charging him again and again when he's within the prison itself. I mean, how can you commit crimes when you're actually locked up? Doesn't that say that the prison themselves have failed in some way to prevent crimes occurring within the prison? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, of course, the crime is simply in him stating this opinion publicly. And if he writes a letter to the different authorities, then that's public. So that's criminal. In Austria. And this is why this shows so well how crazy our societies are, based on these damn Jewish lies that we have to keep up, or that we have chosen to keep up, to go along with. And it is insane. And yet they have to call him delusional, not themselves. The story is delusional. The Holocaust story is delusional. and not the people who are trying to show that it's not true. So that we're really messed up. You know, we live in a crazy, crazy place. Every time I see things about, I read these stories about what's going on in about the Holocaust in Europe. It's so like wow. Oh, and these are grown, intelligent people, you know, with high educational degrees and so on. And they're defending this stuff. Just crazy.
They just seem to accept it without thinking. Without actually thinking about the logic of it. They just blindly accept it.
Well, they're in denial. They're the deniers. You know, they're in denial because it's politically correct, and they've been at some point, I think some of them, they're brought up this way. They're brought up believing this stuff, so they just refuse to question it. They don't want to. And when someone like Froelich is asking them to question it, or any of the so-called Holocaust deniers, they're just people who are saying, you know, I've questioned this, and I'd like to present the evidence I found that we should question it. Well, then they're made out to be, you're not allowed to do that because they've passed laws that say you're simply not allowed to do that in these countries because of what we did. So, you know, they're saying, they're assuming we did that, and then saying you can't question it. You know how it's a kind of a strange circle of insanity going on, really. So, but everybody's very happy that Wolfgang was released. And look at what a hero he is, and devoted, that he, maybe that's why they think he's insane, that he doesn't give up in spite of the fact that he's had to spend so much time in prison.
That's amazing. You know, it really shows.
And this is like the same as the Ursula Haverbeck case, you know. She's in prison because she wouldn't shut up, you know. She wouldn't stop. She also sent letters to court, justices of the court and so on, and prosecutors and people in mayors and so on of cities, giving the facts as she knows them. And they tried to kind of overlook her and keep it quiet, but finally they gave up and said, well, we're gonna actually have to incarcerate her. And they did, because she wouldn't stop. Now Wolfgang Froelich has told the court that he was going to stop writing the letters, and maybe he will. And then he'll be able to remain free. But it's
you can't blame him for that. I mean, at his age,
no.
He's been in prison all those years.
Somebody somewhere in this article, it put after this line, this is an article by a kind of a sympathetic paper, sympathetic to the truthers. By the way, the 67-year-old promised to stop writing the letter once and for all, and then after that, in parentheses, lie. So I don't know if they think it's a lie or everybody thinks it's a lie that he won't or whatever, but
if they find him insane anyway,
he should do it some other way.
if they find him insane anyway, then he's got an excuse.
Yeah.
That's the point of it, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's really the point there. It's funny if you can't stop, if you can't be corrected on this, if you keep believing, you know, that the gas chambers were an impossibility and so on, then you must be a delusional person, and that means that's covered under insanity. So,
well, it's been going on for years, this, hasn't it? These lies that they actually tell, and this was the first time that they actually brought laws in to force people to believe in it. I mean, the propaganda against the Germans goes back right back to the First War. I mean, you mentioned some of it in the last podcast that we did. I know you've done a recent article about this, and also the use of the phrase "never again," which was actually used by the British against the Germans, rather than the Jews using it about the Holocaust. And there was a lot of negative propaganda that was being put out against the Germans about them being baby killers, and a lot of really bad treatment of the Germans as well, which I think is on a par with what the Germans did to the Jews, really. And I can't really see why After the war, the Germans would have thought they would have been treated any differently to the way the British were treated after the First War because of the way the British actually treated the Germans.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, thank you for that, Sven. And that's finding out just how bad Germans were treated in World War One. I don't think it's quite, it happened quite the same way in World War Two. And World War One was far more terrible and important, and had far reaching consequences than I ever understood. And I think we need to look into World War One a lot more than we have and see that, you know, I'm saying that there's one war. It's a part one and part two of this war, of the first part of the 20th century. So that, and this European war is what really destroyed Europe, and it started with World War One. And you know, as I came upon a quote somewhere that 20 million in this one of these articles that 20 million men were under arms during World War One, at, you know, 20 million, just think about that, were fighting at some point during World War One, and how many millions, many, many, many millions died, and many, many millions were maimed and, you know, lost legs and arms and limbs and stuff, very much like what was happening to the United States in these Middle East wars with these explosives that they step on. They blow up their legs and stuff. And it's just reading about it, focusing on this has made me very anti-war again. War is just dumb. It's just dumb. Sometimes you have to do it, but if you just have a war, a small war between, you know, like two parties or something, then they can work it out that way. Maybe that's the only way they can work it out. But when everybody gets into it, and this is what happened, and in my study of it, it was Britain who wanted everybody to get into it because they wanted them to fight against what they perceived as a terrible enemy, Germany, for them. You know, they couldn't, they knew Britain couldn't defeat Germany on its own by itself. It would never, no matter, because they didn't need the oceans and so on. They could do their blockades, but they couldn't defeat the German army. So they needed to get everybody else involved in it. And of course, they were always working, both one and two, to get the Americans in. They knew that would be the final, you know, that would do it for them. And to me, there's no excuse for this. And this needs to be, this needs to be part of the history, and the history of it needs to be revised. And we need more, you know, it's more revisionism. I call it historical revisionism, that is just as important as Holocaust revisionism, because even though we think that the Jews took hold in the Second World War, that's where they got all their power from, and they get it from the Holocaust, they actually got a hold in the First World, from the First World War. That's where they first got so much power in Europe, in European affairs, and they learned so much about how to do it. So then when I came upon, that's my theme lately, and when I came upon this article called English Barbarism, where this German, Hans Kammeyer, is wrote it, and 1914. And he's saying that in Britain, they're saying their cry that's going all over the country is never again, you know, meaning the Germans, never again will we shake hands with a German. Never again will we buy, use, or employ anything made by a German. Never again will we hear, read, sing, or think of anything German. And they had an anti-German campaign going during World War One, that was really amazing, and right out in the open, and all about they demonized the Kaiser, who was a good man. You know, He wasn't anything like this person they made him out to be. So really, what they did to the Kaiser is very similar to what they did to Hitler. I mean, it was just as bad. It was just as bad, except that they got that, the Jews got that Holocaust going in World War II. And that made it all the worse. And the British went along with it. Not that they believed it. They didn't believe it. Their intelligence, which was departments, were very, very, very advanced and extensive and so on. And they didn't believe it. But I've written about that previously in a couple of previous posts. But finally, they went along with it, and the Americans too, because it turned people against the Germans and helped put America in the war, which they knew was necessary to finally for the defeat. So now they've gone along with that Holocaust forever. You know, they can't let it go, that's because they used it. They accepted it then, and they used it so much in the Nuremberg Tribunal, and the Jews got in stronger and stronger that way. But in the First World War, it was basically the British who wanted to destroy Germany for economic reasons, nothing but economic reasons, and just general power on the continent, you know, that the British were holding. So they did this demonization, which was, you might say, a kind of naive, because it was so obvious. I wouldn't fly today, like that image that I have at the top of this post that you mentioned, striking examples that support the one world thesis, of these two actual red Satan's helpers with horns and no clothes and bright red, and this one has a German helmet and a German mustache, and he's grinning evilly, and they're reading this report about how many babies and children they killed this month, got killed this month, and, you know, linking the Germans with Satan, literally. And, you know, and that kind of thing was done back in those days. Or like this other image that I have there, which I just find it amazing. I'm going to just mention it briefly, where it has this picture of a nurse pouring a glass of water out on the ground in front of this wounded prisoner who's got is wanting and is thirsty, and it says, "Wounded and a prisoner, our soldier cries for water." This is a British poster. The German sister in quotes, like, well, she's no sister, pours it on the ground before his eyes. And this, you know, this is a drawing. This is just a something that some artist did. It's not a photograph. It doesn't prove anything. There were no German sisters or Red Cross workers doing things like that. They were very solicitous, took very good care of German prisoners of war. And then they have some fat German general representing Germany and another one representing Austria standing a little bit away, you know, watching approvingly. I mean, it's just something like that wouldn't be believed today. But they moved people then to a frenzy of anger and hatred and blind patriotism with this stuff.
I think there were 30,000 Germans that were in Britain at the time, and it was seen as treasonable to employ them. And they basically wanted nobody to buy anything from Germans, nobody to have anything to do with Germans, nobody to employ them. I mean, this is pretty much in the Second World War, because of what the Jews had done to Germany. I mean, Hitler said, well, you know, we can't have the Jews in these important positions. We don't want to use mm-hmm. your banking system anymore. I mean, it was basically the same thing. The same as what the British were doing to the Germans, Hitler was doing to the Jews in Germany, it seems to me. And yet nobody says anything about the British doing it to the Germans. It's just this big fuss made about what Hitler did to the Jews in Germany.
Well, right, because the overall story, the overall narrative, is that the English blamed the Germans, and so everybody else did. They all decided, yeah, we're going to blame Germany for the war. And in both World War I and World War II, Germany was completely blamed with nobody else at fault for start instigating and getting that whole war going, where so many millions of our wonderful European men were murdered and died and were badly injured, and so many babies were not born, and so many things, you know, didn't happen right. And it's all the fault of Germany, when it never was the fault of Germany. So therefore, they make Britain and out to be noble. That was the British attitude. That's what they wanted to be seen as. They said, oh, they were protecting the little country like Belgium in World War One, and Poland in World War Two, and so on. They were doing, but they never did anything to protect them. They just said they were going to, and then they let them be taken over in both cases. But, you know, they present themselves and get away with it. Because as Churchill said, he's going to write the history. You know, the winners write the history. So if they win, that's it. You know, they get to say how it happened. So their story is that they did no wrong, and they were defending democracy. They were defending this independent small countries. They were defending freedoms. And the Germans were against all these things. And not only against them, they were baby murderers, and they were women they raped and killed and ravished women, when actually it was the Russians who did that. And, you know, just which was their ally, you know. So, and they were allied with Russia in both wars, Britain was, even though they weren't that fond of them. This kind of thing is hard to break through. This is what everybody generally picks up and believes without questioning. If you start to look into it, you can learn some different things. But this is the general picture of it all, that Germans bad, English good. And it's true that what the point that you make, that what the, it's a very good comparison, that what the British did to the Germans, particularly in World War One, is very similar to what the Germans, how the Germans thought about the Jews. You know, that they couldn't tolerate them in their country, but the Germans weren't behaving badly in Britain. They were, or in Canada, or in Australia, or anywhere. They were just they're always good citizens and always mild, you know, and not pushy or trying to get a lot for themselves, but working hard and trying to make a good, you know, decent living for themselves. But, you know, if war breaks out and they're there, they were invited, they were welcome in these countries, these Germans, then suddenly, though, they're not welcome. And suddenly everybody hates them. And the suffering that this article points out further along, if you read the whole thing, it made me feel so terrible, because they put the German men, this is in England, in camps, because they suspected, you know, as suspected German spies. And then the women and children had no, and they didn't worry about their families and how they were going to be taken care of. So the women and children had no income, and they started starving, and they didn't know what to do. And they were out, they joined together, and they went to government offices, you know, asking for help. You know, what can we do? And they were just turned away, like, you know, you terrible people, we're not responsible for you. And the thing that they were told was they would have to go to the British poorhouse, to an English poorhouse. They had poorhouses then. And I guess they were pretty terrible places, because the British are not known back then for having much concern for their lower classes. And if you ended up in the poorhouse, it was not a nice thing. And these German women didn't want to go to the poorhouse. And they tried and tried, and they wandered around. And they lost their homes, you know, they were living in parks, and finally it said they went to the poorhouse. And you never hear anything about them, and don't know what happened, but their children were starving. They were so stressed out, these mothers, they didn't know what they were doing. And And this is all, I believe this is true, and you don't hear about it.
You don't hear about it at all. And I think with the British Way, they sort of looked at the poor as, well, they should be making something of themselves. And they just weren't concerned about them. They just sort of thought, well, they can pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. And it would have just been even worse with German women. I mean, from the look of what it says in that article, they were saying nobody should be helping these Germans at all. So even if these German women did go to the poorhouses, they probably would have been turned away, or they would have been treated terribly there.
And yeah, terribly, I'd say, by the other British poor people in there.
Yeah,
they would have been treated terribly, and that's why they didn't want to go. And you don't know what the fate was, but it had to be terrible, their fate.
Well, it definitely can be contrasted with what Germany did to the Jews in the Second World War. But nobody mentions the fact that the British were doing exactly the same to the Germans. That's the thing. That's what gets me. It's exactly the same thing that the British were doing to the Germans, and nobody talks about it. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Karen. I'm sure we could go on for longer, but we're going to have to finish it here. Thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're tuned.